welcome to Lunchtime Classics on 90.5 FM WUOL. Broadcasting live from WUOL's performance studio on 4th Street in downtown Louisville. Now, here's your host, Alan Brandt.
Thank you. Good afternoon. 12 o'clock on a Wednesday, it means it's Lunchtime Classics Day, and I know you're going to enjoy today's performance, which we'll get to and I'll talk about in just a moment. But there's a lot of things going on here at Classical 90.5 this week. And I guess first and foremost is that Daniel Gillum, our afternoon host, is in New York City this week as he's covering the 2007 Grawemeyer Award in Music coverage. An announcement that they're making in New York City. They're also doing a series of concerts there. So he's been doing daily reports on the morning show and also has a webcast and a blog. We actually embedded some video on that webpage, too, of this morning's interview. So you can go to WUOL.org and take a look at that. Well, we're very happy to have a cellist and pianist duo with us today. And I'd like to welcome, and please welcome, cellist Joseph Kaiser and pianist Nariaki Sugiura. Would you like to tell us what you're going to start your program with?
Yeah, we'll be starting a piece with a piece called Pompeiana No. 2 for cello and piano by Alberto Ginastera, who is a 20th century Argentinian composer. It's basically a rhapsody for cello and piano, which is basically in three sections, fast and slow, and then a faster section. And it's all about, Pompeiana is actually a term for the Argentinian cowboys. So it's a rhapsodic piece that depicts the life of the Argentinian cowboys. And, you know, you can hear a lot of, you know, styles of the traditional Argentinian music. And the first section is you know, very energetic and kind of the cowboys out on the range and whatnot. And then the second section, we have a kind of a quiet campfire song that depicts like the love song and the love stories of the Argentinian cowboys. You can picture kind of a campfire site, the you know, cowboys sitting around and telling their sad stories about missing their homeland and whatnot. And then and the last section is incredibly energetic with the back riding the range with the cowboys, and so it's a kind of a depiction by Ginastera of his native land and some of his native traditional music.
Excellent. Well, let's start the concert then with cellist Joseph Kaiser.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. For the next piece on the program, we're going to do a piece by Franz Schubert, which was probably best known and best remembered for being a composer of songs or Lieder, which are pieces for piano and singers. And so we're going to play the first movement from the Schubert Arpeggione Sonata. Now, the arpeggione actually was an instrument that is no longer in existence, and there are no other actual known pieces for this instrument. But back in Schubert's time, in the time of Beethoven, for example, you know, the instruments were not always exactly, obviously not the same that they are today. There weren't always a violin, viola, and cello in the orchestras. There were some different, you know, there were cellos with five strings. There were cellos of bigger sizes, smaller sizes, and different things. And so this is probably one of these pieces that exist in the repertoire that have been adapted to the cello repertoire, but is interestingly enough was never really intended for cello. And this instrument, the arpeggione, was a six-string instrument similar to a guitar, and it had frets and was played with a bow. I don't know if you can imagine that, but that's what the arpeggione was, and it was written for a friend of his who was the only really great, well-known arpeggione virtuoso. And so at the time it was written, it was actually, you know, Schubert didn't know that it could be adapted to cello or viola, violin. And it stayed as pretty much one of the main, you know, staples of the cello repertoire. The only difficult thing is you can imagine for a six-string instrument, if you're transcribing something for six strings into a four-string instrument, it can pose quite a few problems because, you know, obviously we don't have those other higher two strings. So, but cello technique is advanced to the point that we can manage if you're really, you know, you have the guts to get up and perform it and make it sound easy, which is the trick. And so, but it is such a beautiful work that that it's one of the favorite for all cellists. And and so we're going to play just the first movement. I should mention that we're here today because 2 days from now we'll be giving a full recital at the Indiana University Southeast Campus in New Albany, and that's on Friday night. And so we're just basically playing portions of the program. The Hinostera is on the program and the entire Schubert sonata. And so we'll play the first movement for you now. This is the first movement from Schubert's Arpeggione Sonata in A minor.
Thank you. You're listening to a live broadcast of Lunchtime Classics on Classical 90.5 WUOL, and we just heard cellist Joseph Kaiser with pianist Nariaki Sugiura in a performance of Schubert and the Arpeggione Sonata. We're going to take just a couple of minutes to introduce ourselves to these fine artists. Wonderful playing. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And you're visiting from Bloomington, mm-hmm. Studying at IU. What, Joseph, what are you doing right now at IU?
I'm only doing my second year of the doctoral program and studying with Janos Starker, the famous Hungarian cellist who has been teaching there since, you know, the early 50s or so. And my pianist, Nariaki, is the studio pianist for Mr. Starker. Oh. And so we started playing together this year. And, you know, this is basically just a chance to get out and play as part of, you know, the educational process, but also in preparation for some recitals. And so I talked to him and decided we would get out and find some places to play and put a program together. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Now, are you a team all the time? Are you always playing with your pianist here?
I believe so. Ever since the end of last summer, we were together in the summer, and he was doing some touring.
Which tour?
Many tours.
He's touring extensively. And so when he got back, we talked about starting playing together. And so we did a few concerts so far, but we're just now getting things rolling. So.
But we are both very flexible musicians. We do duos, we do trios, and he plays with many other musicians. I play with many cellists, violinists mm-hmm. all the time.
Well, I know as an accompanist, you have to be flexible.
Yes.
Depending on the performer that you're playing with or the repertoire, but. Cellist, it's you have to be flexible too.
Yeah, of course. You know, I get asked to play from everything from you know, people's chamber recitals where you play continual parts. People have chamber recitals all the time, so you get asked to fill in for a piano trio, a quintet. Actually, this the next 2 weeks I have two quintet recitals in Bloomington, and I'm currently working in three other piano trios off and on, so it's quite busy. But it's nice to have a chance to get out and just play works that we are more familiar with, mm-hmm. You know, in the cello repertoire.
Well, what are you working toward in your career? What's your career path?
I've always been moving towards basically just teaching at the you know, collegiate level. Both of my parents are musicians and teaching at Bradley University. They're both piano teachers. And so ever since I was younger, I've always been kind of influenced by, you know, growing up in a household where my sister was a violinist and she completed her doctorate in violin performance. And so it was just always kind of, you know, the lifestyle that I knew is of, you know, growing up in a household where everyone was playing music together and holidays and everything else, and you know, teaching privately and getting a chance to perform and whatnot. But nothing could be better, really, than I'm just trying to enjoy the school experience of being able to play with different people and meet new people and get out. And it's really a fantastic experience, mm-hmm. especially at IU Bloomington. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we're very grateful that you're here to share your talents with us today. And why don't we go back to the program? What do you have coming up next?
Thank you so much. Well, next, the next piece on the program is the Brahms E minor Sonata. And Brahms is quite a well-known composer with his four symphonies and everything from the German Requiem and Lieder. And he was the first person after Beethoven to really take the sonata for solo instrument and piano. Like violin or cello and piano, and really take it to its you know, fullest level. Since Beethoven was the one who first kind of crafted the you know, the standard form of sonatas, and now that we have Brahms is one of the main sonatas that you'll hear for with cello and piano, and the first sonata that he wrote is quite early in his life. I think he was only 32 or something, and the E minor sonata is. By far, probably of his most popular work for cello, I would say. And instead of playing the first movement for you, today we'll be performing the second movement, which is the minuet. There's three movements to the sonata. they're all quite lyrical and a little bit melancholy in character. The second one, the minuet, of course, is a dance. And so you'll hear the first part of the minuet and then the trio, which is the much more lyrical middle section. And then at the end, it will return to the minuet, which is a little bit of a melancholy minuet. But it's quite charming. So,
all right. Well, we're looking forward to that. Once again, Joseph Kaiser, cello, and Nariaki Sugiura at the piano.
Thank you. So for the next piece on the program, we decided to change it up a little bit. We've been performing pieces that are all going to be performed on the recital Friday evening, and most of them feature, quite an equal partnership between cello and piano. My friend Nariaki, I can never actually call him an accompanist because he's actually doing most of the work. And in all the sonatas, you can tell that the piano part is equally important, the dialogue back and forth between cello and piano and whatnot. So of all the pieces on the program, we have Ginastera, we have Brahms, we have Schubert. And then the last piece on the program Friday night is going to be the violin virtuoso piece, the Sarasate Zagornerweisen. And Zagornerweisen is one of the most commonly played show pieces for violin and piano. But there's a transcription that a professor at Indiana University did, Emilio Colon. He did a transcription of the piece, and it's adapted to cello quite well. And I was thinking... when we set up this presentation, a recital here in Louisville, I decided maybe instead of playing everything that's going to be on the program, maybe we could do something a little bit different. So I wanted to start by instead of playing Zagornerweisen, playing a piece that was pretty much made famous and adapted by my teacher Jano Starker. It's called the Bodermann Paganini Variations. It's based on a theme by Paganini, who is of course the most well known of all string player virtuosos for violin, and basically Paganini could play anything. They said he sold his soul to the devil to be able to play the way he does, and they have some great caricatures of him, and he has the devil eyes and his long fiery hair and these fingers that are 10 inches long and this kind of thing, because it's not possible to play the way this man does. And so what he's most famous for, his legacy, what he left all the violinists is their repertoire now is full of Paganini pieces, concerti and short pieces and caprices. And so what he would do is, nothing that had ever been written for string players could there was nothing he couldn't play. So when he started composing his own music, he just started coming up with these tricks, these effects, fireworks, if you will, to kind of put on a show for the audience. He came up with all these completely crazy things that nobody would ever conceive of, nobody in their right mind at least. So he was doing things like left hand pizzicato and ricochet bowings and staccato up and down and all over the place. So after, of course, Paganini had made all this stuff famous, then other string players tried to adapt that to their instrument. So this set of variations was written by Hans Buttermund, who was evidently, not a very well-known cellist from Berlin from 100 years back or so. And according to my teacher, he was telling me in a lesson one time that he was going through a friend of his was the wife of Mr. Bodermann, and he was going through the drawers and whatnot, and he found this manuscript for these 24 variations that were using all the techniques that Paganini did, but he adapted it to the cello. So what Starker did was he made his own handwritten transcription and kind of condensed the 24 variations and took a few pieces, left a few out, and took pieces from this one and this one, put them together, and made 7 variations. Now, the theme you'll probably recognize, it's from Paganini's famous 24th Caprice, which he wrote the theme for. The theme goes a little something like this. Something like that. So that's the theme that they start off with. And then after that, we go through all these different variations. We have the first variation, which takes the same theme, at least harmonically, and makes it all in eighth notes. So it sounds a little something like this. So instead of... We have... Et cetera, et cetera. So all of a sudden now we have a lot of moving notes, right? Now the second variation, we have what we call double stops. So instead of playing one note at a time, we play two notes at a time. But instead of just playing a lot of double stops, what we have is double stops in a triplet rhythm. So it goes a little something like this. Now remember, the theme is... So now we have... It's already getting a lot more complicated, so it's a little bit harder to follow. Actually, the main reason I love this piece is because it's not exactly what we, you know, most of this stuff is written in the mid 1800s, and it's very typical classical form. You know, it sounds like maybe Mozart or Haydn or something, but this variations, I don't know what kind of jazzy influence they were under at the time, but this is some of the coolest stuff I've ever heard. So now the next variation, this is a Paganini type of a technique, is when you play one set of notes with the bow and you pluck with your left hand while you're playing the other voice. So you're playing and plucking two different little, so you're kind of accompanying yourself. Sounds something like this. To think of this kind of stuff, you must have a lot of free time or just a very creative imagination or something. So now the next variation after this is, to be honest, will be the one where the sweat actually starts dripping down your forehead, because this is the really nerve-wracking one. But this one is just an incredible fireworks display of just double stops up and down the instrument, which sounds something like... And it just keeps going, like never gets easier from that point. And so the next one is something that they call artificial harmonics, which is there are harmonics on the instrument where if you lightly touch a string, then a certain note will come up that's an octave higher. But Paganini really developed this technique of putting your finger down and stopping one place and then lightly touching a string in another place. And it makes, you know, you can make a harmonic wherever you want. They're called artificial harmonics. In this variation, you're going to hear something that you'll probably never, ever hear again, is something where you trill with the other fingers, the artificial harmonic, and it sounds something. And it's still the main theme that we started with, so that sounds something like... supposed to have a very high, you know, ghostly kind of sound. Then we have something that sounds like some kind of a Spanish guitar variation. This takes some creativity as well. So in this, instead of plucking the instrument, which is where you take the bow in your hand and you pluck with your finger, you actually take four fingers and kind of do a strumming type of thing. So this is supposed to be out in Barcelona somewhere, and it's around siesta time, and we're just strumming along on the guitar. After that one, we have what is called a left-hand pizzicato in a variation. So now the right hand is when you take the bow and you pizz and you pluck the string. A left-hand pizzicato, we usually just use the left hand to stop the string and we play with the bow. A left-hand pizzicato is where you make either the pizzicato noise with holding one finger down and plucking with another finger, or you slap the string hard enough to make a kind of a, you know, ping, kind of a ringing sound, which actually you can kind of hear. So that sounds something like this. And then the last one is kind of a culmination finale type of thing, which is just arpeggios and octaves, ricochet bowing and double stops and tenths. And anything that they left out in the first few variations, they throw everything in the kitchen sink at the finale, and it's you know, it's quite a fun display. And I was playing this for Mr. Starker yesterday, and he made up a good point. He said, you know, this doesn't really lend itself very well for a radio performance. You know, he should point this out, because the only people who would ever want to hear stuff like this are other cellists. But then again, if there's other cellists in the audience, then that means they also know all the right notes. So if you start playing the wrong notes, then you know you're in trouble. And he's a funny guy. So I thought it was a good point. But then, you know, what I was thinking is, if I were ever listening to this, or if I came to the radio station, and thank you all for coming. I haven't mentioned that, but you're a fantastic audience. And this is thank you so much again for having us. But I was thinking to myself last night, sometime around 11 when I was practicing, I was thinking, you know, if I ever came to this thing, I would be a little bit bored if I didn't get to see something that I hadn't seen before. You know, this is the kind of stuff that I would want to see if I was in the audience. So for better or for worse, here is the Baderman/Starker Paganini Variations for solo cello. Thank you. So that pretty much wraps up everything that's going to be on the program this Friday. We wanted to leave you with probably the best known of all the cello repertoire as far as encore pieces go. I always remember going to a recital one time when I was younger, and it was a cellist and a pianist who played a duo, and they were on stage, and they played some new music that I'm sure was very important to them and something that was, you know, great as far as new music goes. I don't want to say what the composer was, but it was not exactly the most crowd-pleasing of all repertoire. You know, it was something that was a little hard to sit through at times, and it was some, you know, unknown late romantic sonata on there or something, and then that was it. And then I remember I was walking out, and this is back in Peoria at the recital hall, and the people there, you know, they're very friendly people, and I was a young man, and the older gentleman says to me, just leans over and he says, you know, it's too bad they didn't play anything that I really wanted to listen to. You know, they didn't play anything that, you know, and I didn't really understood what he meant, but it kind of left an impression on me that, and no matter what you're playing, no matter, I'm sure it's very important to you when you're sitting, you know, spend all day practicing it, and it's very important for some, you know, who knows, unknown reason, and it's a great repertoire to somebody, but you should always leave people with something that people might actually want to listen to. So we're going to leave you with the encore piece by Camille Saint-Saëns. This is from Carnival of the Animals. It's called The Swan for cello and piano.
Marvelous. Thank you very much. On Lunchtime Classics, Joseph Kaiser cello and Nariaki Sugiura at the piano at our Steinway. And they are visiting the Louisville area from IU Bloomington. They'll be performing Friday night at IU Southeast. Wonderful. We've had a lot of fun, and you're going to be a great teacher, Joseph, the way you explain those variations. I'm sure you'll do well. Thank you very much. We have updated our website, so check out our schedule. It's up there through May, so you can see what we've got coming up on Lunchtime Classics. Andrew High has been our engineer, our audio designer. I'm Alan Brandt. Thank you so much for coming, and we'll see you next time.